Hello, and a somewhat soggy welcome to today's edition of Here and Now, the Dawlish and Tynmouth Area Talking Newspaper, the last programme of a particularly wet and windy January. Today is the turn of the Red Team once more to bring you the latest news from our region, recorded at our Dawlish studio on Friday, the 30th of January, 2026. I'm John Townsend, leading our windswept team of enthusiastic volunteers. I'm joined by four other readers this week, and as usual, I'll conclude with entertainment on offer at Pavilions Tynmouth and the other local events for the start of February. With the exceptional storms of recent days, we have several news articles on the damage caused by the battering of our coastline over the last week. Last summer's heatwave and drought seem a distant memory, and you might think our reservoirs are now overflowing. Yet 2 weeks ago they were about 82% full, still 10% down on this time last year. I can only imagine by the start of February they must have caught up, so presumably no hosepipe bans for the time being. So, with the latest news stories at hand, let's take a look at this week's front pages. Both the Dawlish Gazette's headline and the Tynmouth Post's are the same, which is hardly surprising given how both towns have suffered the same storms and relentless wind, rain and waves. Even before Storm Ingrid struck, I was on a train in Dawlish, and it was like being in a car wash, being splattered from all sides. My homeward journey last Saturday terminated in Exeter, with GWR laying on a taxi for us stranded Tynmouth passengers. And yes, it was still pouring with rain. So much for dry January. Both front pages proclaim counting the cost of nature's fury. But firstly, I believe Mary has an article from the National Press with pictures of our poor old pier with its end now sadly missing. No doubt headline writers had a field day reporting on the disappear. So what can you tell us from the National Press, Mary?
Well, on Monday this week, I noticed in the Times, yes, there was an article, and it's headed, "Flood alerts issued as more storms blow in." And it says more than 120 flood alerts have been issued across the UK as tumultuous weather systems arrive from across the Atlantic, bringing heavy rain and blustery winds. And they go on to say that over the weekend, Storm Ingrid battered Devon and Cornwall, destroying part of Tynmouth Pier and slamming 12-foot waves into Dawlish seawall. And there is a very good photograph, unfortunately, of the Tynmouth Pier with the end of it really blown away, with just a few stalwarts left and a few beams left at the end there, and it looks really devastated.
It's an aerial view, isn't it, from the seaward end?
It is an aerial view.
Is this in the Times paper?
This is in the Times.
It's quite a striking picture, yeah.
Yes, and it just says that Tynmouth Pier in Devon was damaged by Storm Ingrid.
Yeah.
And a yellow warning is also in place for the rest of the UK. This was on Monday. Mm-hmm. And then I go on to the main headline in the Dawlish Gazette and the Tynmouth paper, which is counting the cost of nature's fury. And businesses are counting the cost after two storms swept across the region, bringing widespread disruption and destruction in their paths. Sea defences crumbled, and parts of a historic pier were washed away as storms Ingrid and Chandra made their presence well and truly felt. Heavy rain combining with high tides saw Network Rail issue a black alert on the line through Dawlish. Train services were suspended after sections of the seawall were breached, but a Herculean effort by engineers meant that trains were operating again through the troubled track section over just 24 hours. Tynmouth was also hit badly, with the end of the town's historic pier sustaining substantial devastation, with smashed parts of their structure being washed up further along the coast at Holcombe. The promenade also suffered damage, with heavy paving slabs scattered and walls broken by the sheer force of the waves. it looks like the 2026 could turn out to be a record year for wild weather. A worrying thought, seeing as we're only less than a month into it.
Hello, it's Anne here. My first article, and I think most of my articles, actually relate to, guess what, the storm. This one is entitled Orange Army in Action as Storms Batter Sea Defences. Dawlish has endured a battering from two major storms in a matter of days, while Storm Ingrid hit the town from the sea, causing areas of damage to the sea wall. Storm Chandra brought huge amounts of rainfall, which burst the Brooks banks and a deluge on roads along the A379 to Exminster. Up to 16 millimetres of rain fell at Ashcombe on Monday night, and both black swan nests were washed away in the torrent of water. It was Storm Ingrid over the weekend, combining heavy rainfall with high tides, that brought a black alert from Network Rail, its highest warning level for only the second time since the Great Storm of 2014. Train services were suspended due to storm damage after two sections of the seawall near Sealawn Terrace, which runs between the line and the footpath, were breached. Engineers from Network Rail worked around the clock to clear the damage and debris which had landed on the tracks and surrounding area along a 2-mile stretch. The part of the wall affected was not part of the new wall and had not been due to work by Network Rail until 2030. The footpath remained shut between Dawlish and Dawlish Warren while repairs were underway. A spokesman for Network Rail said, services were back up and running on one line from the start of Sunday morning, with a speed restriction in place until the necessary route proving inspections and clearance work had been carried out. Both lines were back up and running by 5 p.m. on Sunday. MP Martin Wrigley said Storm Ingrid was a reminder how powerful the sea can be. He said when the train line was closed on Friday afternoon, it was the first closure since the new sea wall had been finished. This demonstrates that the wall is protecting the line, but it also shows that there is still some work to do. The old sea wall was damaged by the waves, thankfully not as bad as in 2014, but it still necessitated a clean-up before the track could reopen. I am also very concerned by the cliffs in between Dawlish and Tynmouth, which should have been addressed in the fifth phase of the Rail Resilience Project, but that was shelved and now is not being funded. With the threat of more rain, these cliffs need to be monitored, and we need to hope that we don't experience another catastrophic cliff fall as we did back in 2014. Network Rail engineers were out clearing the track in what were described as pretty trying conditions, dealing with debris and ballast which had washed away. Work was expected to continue through this week. Beach huts at Coryton Cove sustained damage, as did popular cafe Buddies at Red Rock. Just days later, the town was pounded by a deluge of rain overnight on Monday, bringing a torrent of water through the town. The Brook burst its banks, and flood alerts were issued for the low-lying part of the town at Brunswick Place, Brookdale Terrace, and Station Road. During the night, both black swans' nests were lost. The adult swans all survived, but all eggs were washed away. Volunteers from Wade were out during the night keeping a check on water levels and controlling sluice gates. Engineers from Network Rail also worked through the night, walking tracks and checking for debris.
Well, we've still got the same topic. Storm Ingrid batters town with her full fury. Tynmouth was battered by high winds, heavy seas and persistent rain over the weekend. That was January the 23rd to the 25th, as Storm Ingrid unleashed her fury. The town's seafront bore the brunt of the destruction, with residents waking to scenes of devastation on Saturday morning. The most significant casualty was the town's iconic pier, which sustained substantial damage overnight on Friday as the end section collapsed into the sea. Wreckage from the structure was washed up further along the coast in Holcombe. The owners of the pier are working with maritime engineers to conduct a survey of the structure following the storm damage. In a short holding statement posted online, Maddie Brenner, daughter and niece of Tynmouth Pier's owners Nick Brenner and Lucy Cooper, responded to social media comments hinting that the Victorian landmark had not been properly maintained. We are fully aware that the cosmetic appearance of the pier isn't perfect. However, the reality is that constant structural maintenance over the last decade is what has allowed the Grand Pier Tynemouth to remain standing, despite the recent loss of a section of the deck due to Storm Ingrid. That unseen work has enabled us to fight another day, and we continue to do everything we can to protect the pier. A big storm in February 2014 saw the pier closed for several weeks for major structural repairs. Tynemouth Promenade also took a beating in Storm Ingrid. Paving slabs were ripped up and scattered along the footpath, and walls were smashed by the force of the waves, with bricks being tossed along the front. Along the seawall at Spray Point, a 3-metre-wide sinkhole appeared near the famous Tynemouth Letters. Engineers from Network Rail have visited the scene to survey the damage and install safety cordons. At the point end of the seafront, the sandbar was shifted in the River Teen estuary and sand was washed away, leaving beach huts teetering on exposed foundations. The local marine pilot said several passes of the shipping channel had been made to ensure the safe passage of vessels in and out of the commercial port. The town was braced for further destruction as another named storm, Chandra, swept in on Monday evening. However, while many areas of Tynemouth were subject to flooding, Tynemouth escaped further damage. Local MP Martin Wrigley visited the resort on Sunday, January the 27th, and met Teignbridge District Council Deputy Leader David Palethorpe and Tynemouth Town Councillors. He said he would be calling on the government to provide funding to help the town recover from the devastation wreaked by Storm Ingrid. Tynemouth Mayor Councillor Kate Williams praised the resilience of the local community in the face of destruction caused by the adverse weather conditions. She said her thoughts were with the owners of the pier as they handle the national attention that the weather and damage the weather has brought. Mother Nature has reminded us of the beauty and power of the sea, but even with changes to our shoreline following the storm, it doesn't change the community spirit here in Tynemouth, she said. Living by the coast requires resilience, always changing, always enduring, but always home.
Well, my next article is also about storm, but it's more pictorial, really. I've got pictures of the Orange Army battling to repair the railway sea defences at Dawlish. Brickwork, which Mary just mentioned about on Tynemouth Promenade, the brickwork that's been damaged. Wave watchers braving the elements at Shaldon as Tynemouth takes a battering from Ingrid. A man with his dog, a little dog, I feel quite sorry for the dog, wave dodging, it says wave dodging on two legs and four at the Ness in Shaldon, man running down a hill with an enormous wave just about to crash over the roadway where he and his little dog are running. Poor dog. Tossed aside like confetti, giant stone and concrete seawall sections on the seafront at Dawlish, which have been damaged. And then the last one, which made us all laugh when we saw it. Storm Chandra soaked much of Devon with an unprecedented amount of rain. And there's a large notice, which I assume is normally there, obviously put there by a local church, which says, the sign Try Praying seems apt after such a biblical deluge. The article goes on to say, as storms Ingrid and Chandra rolled in over a period of 72 hours, towns on the coastline of Teignbridge found themselves braced to bear the full brunt of storm force winds and torrential rain. Elsewhere in the county, properties were damaged by waves and debris thrown up at Torcross in the South Ams, while in Exmouth, cars were reported to be stuck in sand drifts. Storm Chandra brought an unprecedented amount of rain in the space of 12 hours, causing widespread disruption across all of the county, with the Environment Agency issuing multiple flood warnings for rivers and numerous roads closed by flooding.
You may be pleased that I've got a slightly different topic this time, and it's headed, Join the Heli Hike for Air Ambulance. A Devon charity are calling on walking enthusiasts to sign up and join its life-saving walking challenge. Following the success of its first heli hike last year, Devon Air Ambulance's fundraiser returns for 2026 with the addition of a brand new 6-mile route. Starting on the South Devon coast at Bigbury on Saturday, July the 4th, hikers from across the country are invited to choose between walking a 6-mile route, 14-mile hike, or take on the ultimate 26-miler. Walkers will take in some of Devon's most stunning stretches of the Southwest Coast Path. Beginning in Bigbury and winding around South Devon, where they will discover stunning spots, including seascapes over Burr Island, picturesque scenes of the Avon Estuary, and views of Malthouse Point. Expect steep climbs, narrow paths, stiles and steps, while every ounce of effort will be rewarded with jaw-dropping panoramic views and the knowledge and reward that they are helping to raise awareness and vital funds for a life-saving local charity. Last year, a team from Red Rock Electrical took part. Matt Simmons, managing director, said, "Our company had been wanting to do something to raise money for the Devon Air Ambulance for a while. We heard the advert for Devon Heli Hike on the radio and thought it was the perfect opportunity. A group of employees and friends took on the 26-mile hike. It was a harder challenge than a lot of us expected, but the achievement outweighed all the aches and pains. The event is well organized, and we thoroughly enjoyed a celebratory glass of bubbles at the finish line. And for more information and to sign up, visit Devon Air Ambulance's website." And there is a good photograph of the Devon Air Ambulance plane helicopter flying in the sky.
Charities benefit from Mayor's Fund. Two Tynemouth charities welcomed the new year with a cash boost thanks to Tynemouth Mayor Councillor Kate Williams. Teen Heartbeat and Tynemouth Shop Mobility were selected as the Mayor's charities for her first term in the role, 2024-2025, and each organisation was presented with a cheque for £983.02 before the Tynemouth Town Council meeting on Tuesday, January the 13th. "What I really love about these two charities," she said, "are they are local. They are small charities in the scheme of things, but mighty in the work they do and what they have achieved so far for our town." Councillor Williams chose Teen Heartbeat because she has had personal experience of friends and family who have been affected by heart conditions. "Heart-related conditions hit very close to home for me, especially as my husband Peter has been quite poorly previously, ultimately having suffered a heart attack." She explained, adding that she had also lost friends in 2024 due to heart conditions. Shirley Brokenshaw, who founded Teen Heartbeat, does so much here in our immediate community, both with fundraising for defibrillators and getting them placed throughout the town, and also offering free CPR training, Councillor Williams noted. Teen Shop Mobility, based in the Tynemouth Quay car park, was Councillor Williams' second chosen charity for 2024-25. The organisation hosted Councillor Williams on her first official engagement as mayor. "I was given such a warm welcome and learned a lot about the charity and the varying people being supported," Kate said. "Mobility struggles are faced by residents and visitors to our community of all ages, not just the elderly. To offer a small gesture and donation for Teen Shop Mobility to put towards aids or a new chair for someone seemed a no-brainer to me," she commented. Councillor Williams is now into her second term as mayor, and this year she has chosen Tynemouth RNLI and Hector's House as her nominated charities. "I have picked the Tynemouth RNLI because they do such a fabulous job locally, putting their own lives at risk to help others. But also Hector's House residents, a local cat charity, who specialise in rescuing, neutering and rehabilitating abandoned out of our feline friends." Councillor Williams revealed, "As a lifelong cat owner, my girl Iris is now 19 years of age and animal lover, and having followed all that this charity undertakes, both here in Teignmouth, Torquay, and all the surrounding areas, I wanted to show some support for them, she added. Money towards the mayor's charities are raised throughout the term from donations or fundraising events. In addition, the mayor has an annual allowance to use throughout their term for putting on events, travel or expenses to enable the mayor to fulfil their civic duties. Any unspent funds can be put back into general reserves or donated to charity. I have done my best not to use those funds, said Councillor Williams. I consider this role to be a privilege, and no one can say that I have received any financial gain from it, she added. This has left a nice sum in the balance from the 2024-25 term, which I have now shared between the Heartbeat and Teignmouth Shop Mobility. I will do likewise for the 2025-26 term.
Devon pushes ahead with SEND reforms. Devon County Council has shared an update on its major programme to improve support for young people with special educational needs and disabilities, SEND. The Building Inclusive Learning Communities work is part of the wider SEND transformation programme, refreshed last year to speed up improvements and make sure children get the right help at the right time. The programme focuses on early support, better partnership working, and helping more children have their needs met in local mainstream schools. The council says too many families currently rely on long waits, diagnosis-led processes, or specialist placements far from home. By strengthening local provision and improving how services work together, the aim is to reduce stress for families and improve children's outcomes. This latest update, presented on Thursday, January the 22nd, to the Council's Children's Services Scrutiny Committee, highlights progress in bringing education, health and social care services closer together, as well as work to increase school capacity so children with additional needs can be better supported in their own communities. The report also recognises wider challenges, including rising demand, financial pressures, and the environmental impact of children having to travel long distances to school. The council says increasing inclusive education locally will help reduce travel stress, cut carbon emissions, and make services more sustainable. Councillor Frank Biedermann, chairman of the Children's Scrutiny Committee, said, "Every child in Devon deserves the chance to learn, grow, and succeed close to home. I am pleased to see real progress being made. This programme is about making sure families get support earlier, schools feel confident to meet children's needs, and services work together rather than in silos. There is still a lot to do, but it's clear we are absolutely committed to getting this right for young people."
Teignmouth Band is seeking album funding. A band based in Teignmouth with a unique musical pedigree has launched an appeal to fund recording a first album. Music Channel, which has links to the Moody Blues and the Pogues, needs £3,000 to have a hope of recording an album, CD and cover printing. Leanne Martin, who runs Meadows Florist and Gift Shop in Northumberland Place, was one of the band's founding members. Her musical background comes partly from her dad, singer-songwriter Steve Gibbons, who played guitar in the original lineup of the Moody Blues and has a star of fame in Birmingham, where he was born. Another musical link comes from her landlord, Ian Hunt, whose brother, Daryl, played bass in the Pogues. Leanne explained, "We moved to Dawlish 10 years ago, where we saw the Great Storm. When I was a child, we often had the likes of Wizard and the Moody Blues jam and rehearse in our living room on Cato Street in Saltley." Leanne is now joined by her 16-year-old daughter, Meadow Martin, who is a Year 11 student at Teignmouth Community College and whose drumming lessons have given her the skill to become part of the lineup. The other members are bassist Tom Burns from Timoth and guitarist Andy B. Vocalist Leanne explained, "It's very difficult getting a record deal these days, so many musicians are taking things into their own hands. Crowdfunding is the only feasible way we can afford to record our songs. Any financial backing to help this can literally create a pathway into the music industry for us. We aim to do support slots with signed bands and get enough traction to get a recording contract, management deal, and become a professional touring band. We have a way to go to generate the funds, but we are extremely hopeful. If we can record an album, we can then look to having a launch night. The band has recorded its first song, Be My Valentine, which tells the story of unattainable love at Studio 8830 Studios near Exeter. Leanne's career has gone from being a full-time DJ at Stringfellows in London and other nightclubs and a degree in art and design from Chelsea College. While DJing at the clubs, she met many famous faces, including George Michael, Freddie Mercury, Prince, Lemmy, and Stevie Nicks. In fact, her raspy vocals have been likened to Nicks. The studio has given the band a price of £2,700 to complete their album, plus £300 for CD printing with graphics. A live stream at Studio 8830 of a few songs should go ahead in March, and they will be gigging in Timoth and Exeter and London in the summer. Leanne said, "Our album songs are in the vein of Jet, The Stones, Dandy Warhol, Prodigy, with a nod to punk. The songs have catch hooks which I tap into by jamming to the music, and the lyrics are added either spontaneously or afterwards, hence the band name Musical Channel. To donate, go to https://tinyurl.com/y6cra6bu.
I have four death notices. The first is George James Hulbert, who passed away peacefully at home on January the 14th, aged 81 years. A loving husband, father, grandfather, brother, uncle, and cherished friend to many. He will be sadly missed by all who knew and loved him. And a celebration of his life will take place at St. Peter's Church, Shoreden, on the 12th of February at 12:30. And then there's Rosemary McClelland, who passed away peacefully at Greenslades Nursing Home on January the 12th, aged 81 years. A devoted wife, mother, grandma, and friend who is going to be deeply missed. And a celebration of her life will take place at St. Michael's Church, Tynmouth, on February the 13th at 10 o'clock, and formal dressed, please, at the request of the family. And then there's Rita Quayle. Rita passed away peacefully at home on the 9th of January, aged 97. Rita was a devoted wife of Albert Quayle and a dearly loved mother to Faye, Megan, and Hazel. The funeral service will take place at St. George's Church, Holcombe, at 2 p.m. on Thursday the 5th of February. The family requests that no black be worn, followed by a cremation at Torquay Crematorium. And finally, Dennis Mills passed away peacefully at Dawlish Hospital on January the 11th, aged 92 years. A devoted husband to the late Patricia, and a loving father, grandfather, and cherished friend to many. He will be sadly missed by all who knew and loved him. And a celebration of his life will take place at Tynmouth Methodist Church on Wednesday, January the 11th at 12:30.
There's just one more.
Yes. And Eldra Davis, who passed away peacefully at home on January the 4th, aged 92 years. A loving husband, father, grandfather, and cherished friend. He will be sadly missed by all who knew and loved him, and a celebration of his life will take place at the Catholic Church of Our Lady and St. Patrick's Church, Tynmouth, on Friday the 6th of February at 10 o'clock.
Hello, this is Molly. And this article is about an organisation I wasn't even aware of. The initials are NCI. And it says, NCI Stalwart Handed Long Service Award. A volunteer who keeps a watchful eye along the coast around Tynmouth has been presented with a Long Service Award for his dedication to the National Coast Watch Institution in Tynmouth. Tony Parker received his 10-year service certificate and badge from NCI Tynmouth Station Manager James Campbell on Monday, January the 20th. As he presented Tony with his award, James thanked him for his service and dedication and described him as a stalwart of the station. You always know the watch is in safe hands when Tony is on duty, James commented. It's impossible to arrive before Tony. He's always in early, he added. Tony, who spent 40 years as a barber at Brimson's in Newton Abbot, signed up as a volunteer after hearing about NCI Tynmouth from one of his customers. He arrived at the station just after the current East Cliff Took Lookout Tower was completed. NCI Tynmouth is the ears and eyes along the coast between Torbay and the ex-estuary. It is staffed entirely by volunteers. The organisation receives no public funding and is completely reliant on voluntary contributions and donations. Based in the old Coast Guard station at East Cliff in Tynmouth, volunteers keep watch from the lookout tower during daylight hours, looking for people or vessels who might be in difficulty or distress. If they spot anybody in trouble, they initiate and coordinate a response alongside other agencies such as the Royal National Lifeboat Institute, HM Coast Guard, the police, ambulance service and border force agency. Volunteers keep watch during daylight hours for 365 days a year. The team also operates two webcams, which can be viewed on its website and provides advice on local sea conditions and weather reports. Visitors are welcome to visit the lookout whenever it is open.
And I'm David, the erstwhile choirmaster of the Red Team, but in a different capacity today. And my first item is Ambulance Charity awarded £200,000. Southwestern Ambulance Charity has been awarded £200,000 from NHS Charities Together and NHS England to enable SWAFT's Staying Well Hub to enhance wellbeing support for colleagues across the Southwest Ambulance Service Foundation Trust. The funding follows a successful collaborative grant application between Staying Well Hub and Southwest Ambulance Charity and forms part of a national £11 million programme, including a £5 million programme contribution from NHS England. The programme is supporting 29 ambitious projects across England. At a time where the NHS is experiencing one of its busiest winter periods, the funding will enable SWAFT to provide crucial wellbeing support for its workforce, both now and into the future. NHS staff are the driving force behind our healthcare system, but they are currently working in some of the toughest conditions in history, with growing pressure from increased demand for health services. Research from NHS Charities Together shows that almost half, 47% of NHS staff surveyed, and they said that their job is negatively affecting their mental health, while 41% report an impact on their physical health. This makes targeted wellbeing support more vital than ever. Through this funding, SWAFT's Staying Well Hub will design and deliver a range of proactive, evidence-based wellbeing initiatives, ensuring support is meaningful, impactful, and sector-leading. Lauren Dunn, Head of Wellbeing and Occupational Health at SWAFT, said, "To receive this grant, and be supported to deliver such a genuinely transformative programme of work is an immense privilege.
The next article is about a provision of work experience. The Torbay and South Devon NHS Foundation Trust work to support people into health and care careers has been recognised nationally. The Trust has won the NHS England Silver Award for work experience, recognising the people across the organisation who make work experience possible. Every year, colleagues across the Trust's many services take the time to welcome learners, explain what they do, and give people a real feel for what it's like to work at the Trust, which provides acute health care services from Torbay Hospital, community health services, and adult social care. As the largest employer in Torbay and South Devon, the Trust plays an important role in creating opportunities for local people. Work experience is a big part of that, helping school students, young adults, and people changing careers to build confidence, try something new, and see what's possible. It also helps us widen participation and support our communities by opening the door to people who may not otherwise have considered a career in health and care. Amber Watson, Work Experience Administrator, led the Trust's mission for the Work Experience Quality Standard, bringing together examples of the brilliant work happening right across our services. Reflecting on the award, Amber said, "This is a real team achievement. The feedback we received highlights just how much our colleagues care about giving people a good experience. I want to say a big thank you to everyone who makes time to support learners. The Silver Award is a lovely recognition of that commitment." The Trust said, "The award reflects the strengths of what we already do and also gives us helpful feedback on where we can keep improving. Thank you to everyone who plays a part in supporting work experience. This award is for you, and we're really proud of what we've achieved together."
And my next item is fast fashion forces closure of Salvation Army banks. And as someone who was born in a Salvation Army hospital in the East End of London, this particularly interests me. Residents in parts of Teignbridge may notice changes to their local textile bank service, as 8 Salvation Army banks are due to be removed. The Salvation Army Trading Company has provided a textile recycling service across Devon since 2016. However, following a strategic review of its clothing bank network in response to changing market conditions, the Salvation Army is adjusting its clothing bank network. This change would enable us to use our resources more effectively to manage the unsustainable volumes of used textiles across the UK, the Salvation Army Trading Company said in a recent statement. The statement goes on to say, as part of this review, a number of clothing banks will be removed. However, many other banks remain available for public use, and we continue to expand our network of more than 250 charity stores. These changes allow us to maximise fundraising capabilities, minimise costs, and redirect resources to other impactful reuse and cycling services. We are grateful for the continued support from members of the public, our donors and partners. The following banks will be removed by the end of January: the Strand Car Park, the Strand, Starcross, Sandy, Lane Car Park, Sandy Lane, Dawlish, Barton Hill Car Park, Barton Hill, Dawlish, and the Nest Car Park, Nest Drive, Ashorton. Oh, and also Jack's Patch Garden Centre, Timoth Road in Bishop Stainton, the Court Street Car Park in Betton Way, Moreton Hampstead, Dawlish Warren Car Park, Beach Road, Dawlish Warren, and the main car park off the B3387 in Widdicombe in the Moor. The Salvation Army Trading Company's review follows a difficult period in the global textile market, which has been struggling for several years. Fast food and now ultra-fast fashion has flooded the textile market with low-quality and low-value garments. It's estimated more than 2 tons of clothing are bought each minute in the UK, more than any other country in Europe.
Fire crews battle kitchen blaze in Exminster. A fire in a property in Exminster was quickly tackled by fire crews using breathing apparatus and hose reel jets. Crews from Danes Castle and Middlemore were mobilised to reports of an alarm sounding and smoke coming from vents at a property in Berrybrook Meadow at around 11:30 a.m. on Monday, January the 26th. Initially, 2 fire engines were sent, but a further 2 were called upon arrival at the scene. The fire involved electrical equipment in the kitchen. Crews extinguished the fire using 4 breathing apparatus, 2 hose reel jets, and a positive pressure fan. The kitchen was 50% damaged by fire, with 10% smoke damage throughout the entire property, Devon and Somerset Fire and Rescue Service said.
Just putting my other hat on now as your sports correspondent, and yes, it's running to kick off with. It's the Trotters duo take on Longleat 10K. Teambridge Trotters duo Cheryl Dunn and Laura Law, difficult to say, isn't it, visited Longleat in Wiltshire and were not put off by the wild animals or Storm Ingrid for the popular 10K. Cheryl commented, "Really enjoyed this run. It was a great turnout of 868 in a 10K and very busy. It meant so much support the whole way round, including friends and family. They were able to watch at different spots around the course to cheer you on. But what a hill to get up at the end of it." Completing the trial race, respectively, in Laura Lowe completed the rail race in 54 minutes and 36 seconds, placing her in 394th. Gerald Dunn was 593rd in 58.45. The fastest female finisher was 39.20. The Teambridge Trotters Ladies 10K is open for entries, taking place on June the 28th at Ipplepen, TQ12 5QQ. The popular race follows local lanes and offers free entry for 15 to 17-year-olds, but I wonder if any of the Red Team ladies might consider taking part themselves.
This next article has a picture of something we don't see very often, a red telephone box. There are some very pretty wild flowers in the foreground, poppies and lavender. And it's called Ringing in the Seeds of Change. A former red telephone box in Bishop Stainton is to reopen as a nature station in March. The redundant BT phone box on 4th Street will become a little hub for nature growing and climate action, a spokesperson from Bishop Stainton Climate Impact Action said. After a makeover, which involved ensuring the box was painted the correct shade of red, Bishop Stainton wildlife wardens have spent the past couple of months designing and fitting out the interior. The box will enable residents to swap seeds and share posters and information about local wildlife, nature, and climate-related events. The idea to turn the phone box into a seed swap and information centre for wildlife-friendly gardening and the community plot was one of several suggested by villagers after Bishop Stainton Parish Council acquired the kiosk last year. Bishop Stainton Parish Council has been working closely with local community groups and volunteers to consider the environment and climate change in its decision-making so it can contribute to a safer, more resilient neighbourhood for residents and nature. In November, councillors agreed to go pesticide-free. This means that as well as ensuring all its green spaces are managed without the use of chemicals, the parish council is also committed to raising awareness about how residents can support a pesticide-free parish at home. We're very appreciative of all the time and effort freely given by all members of Climate Impact Action, community volunteers working with parish councillors and the parish clerk, commented Bishop Stainton Parish Council Chair Henry Merritt, as the move to become pesticide-free was announced.
And my last item for this month is rain wins the battle against rugby. When even the rugby fixtures are falling foul of the weather, you know the conditions must be treacherous. Newton Abbott RFC First 15 were scheduled to visit Barnstaple's Twos, hoping to end their troubles on the road. From early on in the week, though, it seemed unlikely that the game would go ahead, and Barham confirmed the postponement on Friday the 23rd of January. Just one match in Newton's league went ahead, which saw Truro win 23-10 on the road at Plimstock Oaks. Back at Rackerhays, meanwhile, Newton Abbott Spartans were awaiting Tiverton Seconds with a first win of the season still eluding them, only for the rain to have the last laugh once again. No games went ahead in the county's three Devon North and East Division either. Elsewhere, Tynmouth RFC First 15 had no game schedules, whereas their men's Second 15 and ladies team, yes, you've guessed it, had their fixtures called off. In truth, there was very little rugby action taking place anywhere in the county. In Tynmouth men's First 15's division, the regional 2 South West, well, all of the games were, yes, you guessed it, rained off. Exmouth RFC were able to get their home match played against Matson in Regional 1 South West, and they enjoyed a comfortable 63-12 win. And if the rain continues in such diluvian strength, well, I might not even have a job next month.
And so to entertainment on offer in the week ahead at Pavilions Tynmouth. Two films are showing in the first week of February. On Tuesday the 3rd at 2:30 and 7:30 p.m, Dragonfly features Brenda Blethyn in a very different role from her TV Vera series. A lonely widow, Elsie, strikes up a friendship with her troubled neighbour, Colleen, who takes on caring responsibilities after a fall. But deep-rooted tensions soon come to a head when Elsie's resentful, guilt-ridden son stirs up trouble, bringing shocking consequences. That's Certificate 15. Then on Thursday the 5th of February at 2:30 and 7:30, a psychological thriller stars Benedict Cumberbatch in The Thing with Feathers. After a tragic loss, a grieving father tries to raise his young sons while dealing with an unlikely, unpredictable, and uninvited house guest. That's also Certificate 15. And I'll give you the box office number, 01626 249 049. And a reminder that it's worth asking for audio description headphones, if that's what you'd like. Some films have that facility. It's worth asking. And I'll give you a reminder of our own telephone number should you wish to leave a message and someone will get back to you. It is 073 76 147 374. And a few other dates. Tuesday the 3rd of February at 10 a.m. at Bitten House, Tynmouth, the Macular Society meets, and all are welcome. Also on Tuesday the 3rd, Dawlish History Group meets in the Manor at 2:30 p.m. And a reminder that Dawlish Community Transport is off to IKEA and Dunelm on Tuesday the 3rd. Cost is £12.50. And the following week, the following Tuesday the 10th, Dawlish Community Transport are off to Coombe Garden Centre at Honiton. That's a new venue, and that's £19. Details, as always, 01626 888 90. So, with all sorts on offer in early February, we come to the end of today's programme. We hope you have enjoyed listening to this week's Here and Now, as I close by wishing you a delightful week ahead, when the Yellow Team will be recording the next news on Friday, the 6th of February. This week it has been the pleasure of the Red Team to bring to you Here and Now. Our producer is Chris Edmonds, kindly on loan from the Green Team, and our readers have been Mary King, Anne Hibbard, Molly Atkin and David Quay, with Sue Smallwood and the team being our copiers and dispatchers. So it's goodbye from them and from me, John Townsend, until next time, next month. Goodbye.